This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
We're leading with the cost of healthcare, data suggesting that the fault, dear Brutus, lies not with ourselves. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. When it comes to healthcare, the U.S. spends $3 trillion a year, the most on Earth, and the conventional wisdom runs that a lot of this is you and me getting too much healthcare, aided and abetted by doctors that order too many tests and procedures, specialists. But a new article in JAMA, the medical journal, suggests that it may not be us, it's them charging a lot, from the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY. Dan Gorenstein reports.
In 2016, the U.S. spent nearly twice as much on healthcare as 10 other high-income countries. If it's not us going to the doctor more, then what is it?
Basically, everything in America costs more.
Ashish Jha is one of the study authors and Harvard health professor.
We pay physicians more. We pay nurses more. We know that pharmaceutical prices are much higher.
The paper compared U.S. spending to 10 other industrialized nations and found that higher prices and more administrative costs separate us from other industrialized countries. University of Chicago Harris School Dean Kate Baker says this paper offers new insights but isn't conclusive.
It would be nice if we could say, hey, look, we pay higher prices, we just need to lower the prices and everything will be fine.
Baker says before pursuing new policies to lower prices, we first must learn if U.S. consumers are paying more for the same quality of care and services. A specialist in the U.S. may be more expensive, for example, but may have more training than one in France. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Numbers 2.5 hours before the opening bell, the S&P future is up 0.3%. 100-share index in London is up 0.2%. Interest rates, as viewed through 10-year Treasury yield, is down at 2.84%. South Dakota requires out-of-state online retailers to collect sales tax. This issue is about to go before the U.S. Supreme Court. States, e-tailers, and shoppers across the country should pay attention. Marketplace's Aaron Schrenk has this preview.
Businesses only have to collect sales tax in states where they have a physical presence. John Hicks at the National Association of State Budget Officers says it means a lot of lost revenue every year for states.
About $26 billion in sales tax goes missing from remote sales.
But e-tailers say it'll be too costly if they're forced to collect and send taxes everywhere their customers live. Carl Szabo is with trade group NetChoice.
If we expose these small businesses to 46 different auditors and over 12,000 different tax jurisdictions, those are the real losers.
The law is on the e-tailer's side for now. Mike Shake at law firm Reed Smith says physical presence is still the standard.
Congress can change that if it wants to.
Congress hasn't wanted to, but now some lawmakers want to clear the way for new online sales taxes within the federal spending bill. The high court might beat Congress to the punch, though. Oral arguments in the South Dakota case are scheduled for April 17th, Tax Day. I'm Aaron Schrenk for Marketplace.
Another big story from retail. Walmart is expanding home delivery for groceries to 2 out of 5 U.S. households. 100 metro areas will get the trucks, the detergent, toilet paper, juice, apples, milk. They've been testing this in 6 cities, $9.95 flat fee, $30 minimum. Why is Walmart doing this? Because they love you and because they're terrified of Amazon. Ten years ago this week, a wild milestone in the history of the financial crisis, the government arranged a shotgun marriage and JPMorgan Chase bought up a collapsing Wall Street institution, Bear Stearns, for pennies on the dollar. Today I want to talk to a reporter who got very acquainted with the culture as the bear mauled Bear. Kate Kelly does Wall Street for the New York Times and was covering the Bear Stearns mess for the Wall Street Journal in real time. She wrote the book about this called Street Fighters. Ms. Kelly, thanks for connecting here.
Glad to be here. You know, in the book, you make a point. Bear Stearns somehow attracted a different crowd of folks from perhaps some of the other banks on Wall Street. What are we talking about?
So there was a cultural saying that they liked to hire people who were PSDs, poor, smart, and had a deep desire to be rich. They just wanted people to be quick studies, hard workers, and highly motivated. And of course, this being Wall Street, greed was regarded as the primary motivator.
CEO at the time, Jimmy Cain. I mean, he's part of this, isn't he?
Absolutely. Jimmy led the firm during its most successful years. He was a billionaire on paper at one point. He was a huge golf enthusiast. He would go once a week to play golf via helicopter, often leaving the city on Thursday afternoon and not working on Friday, by the way, checking in occasionally by phone. And the fact that he didn't double down on his office time and sort of put aside some of these personal pastimes when the company had had a humiliating setback that year that was related to the bond market and the ability to get cash and credit and the ability to keep investors comfortable was remarkable.
Do you think Wall Street has changed since the financial crisis, or is it just that we've all moved on and it's back to the culture that you're describing?
I do think it's changed quite a bit. I mean, I think the Dodd-Frank financial regulation reforms of 2010 and with them new capital requirements, they have all made the system safer and much less likely to experience a similar crisis. We've also seen business models change that would allow these firms to better withstand a future crisis. On the other hand, regulations may be going away. People are certainly still motivated by greed. But I do think a lot of measures have been taken that have reduced the gunslinger aspect of that time. I think that risk has moved into other spheres of the economy and the markets.
In the teeth of the financial crisis, Kate Kelly was at the Wall Street Journal. She now covers Wall Street for the New York Times. Her book, Street Fighters, The Last 72 Hours of Bear Stearns, the Toughest Firm on Wall Street. Kate, thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Golf and pot smoking is part of that story. The director's cut of that interview will be at marketplace.org a little bit later today. Our series about the financial crisis, Divided Decade. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.